AG1.
What's up? I'm here to talk to you about AG1 Athletic Greens again. You know, it's important to me that the supplements I take are high quality, and that's why I've been taking AG1 for, what is it now, 4 years, 3.5 years or something like that? The thing I like about it is it's researched and developed by an in-house team of scientists, doctors, and nutritionists with decades of experience in their fields. So you know it ain't BS, it's AG. They are the real deal. I've been drinking it for so long. Quality for AG1 isn't a buzzword. They really push hard. Expert-led scientific research, high-quality ingredients, industry-leading manufacturing, rigorous testing. They got it all. At each step of the process, AG1 is going above and beyond. Now, what I like about them, first of all, you can trust what's in every scoop of AG1 because it's an NSF certified for sport, which is like a rigorous, independent quality. They've tested for over 950 contaminants, banned substances. The industry standard apparently is only testing for 10. Dude, it's 95 times as rigorous. And it's not complicated. It's so simple. It's just replacing health supplements like multivitamins, digestive aids, immune support, in just one simple scoop. It takes 60 seconds. You don't have to swallow a bunch of pills on an empty stomach. Boom. And as I always say, you get a little bit of water in there too. Get that day started. So with the water, and then for me, the prebiotics, probiotics, and digestive enzymes for gut support is probably the most important ingredient. I eat a pretty varied diet, so I get my nutrition from a lot of places, but I got to eat more fermented foods. But AG1 lets me have this prebiotics and probiotics first thing in the morning. Take care of my digestive enzymes, which if you're a listener of the podcast, you know I need help with. All right. Look, I've partnered with AG1 for so long because they make a high-quality product that I genuinely look forward to drinking every day. I chug down an AG1 maybe within 10 minutes of getting out of bed. It's the way I start my day every day, even on the road. So if you want to replace your multivitamin and more, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free one-year supply of vitamin D3 plus K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription at drinkag1.com/mighty. That's DRINKAG, the number one, .com/MIGHTY. drinkag1.com/mighty.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
What's up, shitheads? Welcome back to another episode of High and Mighty. It's me, your boy, the number one fuck boy. The number one fuck boy. The number one fuck boy. Joining me as always in the High and Mighty Studios is my nearly silent co-host, Arthur Chicho Gabris. And also joining me is longtime listener, first-time guest, and longtime friend, first-time guest, longtime co-New York resident, recent LA transplant, Nate Dern. Nate, thanks for coming to the High and Mighty Studios.
That's really all true. Good to be here. Good to be here.
Yeah, and we're happy to have you.
I've seen I've listened to the intro so many times. It's truly a treat to watch it happen in person.
I think people are split 50-50. No cuck boy today. I'm not feeling it.
Okay, that's fine. Don't force it.
It's a 50-50 split of people hating it in person or being terrified of it in person or going like, it's nice to finally see.
It was great to see. Yeah.
If you want Artie to stop licking your hand, I can make
it. I'm sort of into it. Yeah.
All right. Because he will do it until the salt is gone from your. If you got a little sweaty on the ride over here, he's into it. Uh-oh. He's a fucking freak. He's a freak. So, Nate, you know the drill, but we're going to read some 5-star reviews. So, shitheads, listeners, fans of Nate that are tuning into this podcast for the first time, I read reviews of my podcast if you rate me 5 stars and it's a roast of me personally. You negatively attack me, the show, my loved ones, then I will definitely read it on the air. So, for example, here's one from Steamy Load, and the title of the review is Piece of Human Garbage. This podcast is great for anyone who wants to feel better about themselves. Words cannot express the relief I feel each time I put on this podcast and say to myself, at least I'm not the number one fuckboy. Wow. Hey, you know, that actually is a positive review.
Yeah,
I want to say.
It might be, actually, yeah.
Yeah, like, if I'm helping you, then thank you. You're welcome, is what I should say. This is from Poodle124155. You are the only person who I have heard use the phrase in perpetuity, and you use it a lot. Learn other words. Okay, yeah, I'm more about roasting, but I'll take notes. I'll take some executive development, executive
so
notes.
Say in perpetuity less?
Yeah.
Oh, I think they just said that on the most recent episode of Game of Thrones. Because you watch Game of Thrones, Daenerys was talking to Jon Snow like, hey, your ancestor took the knee to me in perpetuity. And what does that mean, Tyrion? Yeah. So Gabrus isn't the only person saying
it's
in perpetuity.
Me and the Breaker of Chains. Yeah. I'm the Mother of Dragons. I thought it was pretty awesome in that moment when took just the jump to Game of Thrones for however long we need to.
Yeah, let's dive into Game of Thrones, the title of this podcast.
I loved when it's like I'm not owed to what my father did, and he's like, and I'm not owed to what my ancestors
did.
It's like
good.
They're like going head to head. I love it
so much.
Yeah,
that was a great episode. I could have just listened to them keep talking. Yeah,
I said to Tiff, I'm like, this episode is so exciting, and it has like the least amount of fighting in it.
Yeah, that's
it's
true.
Like the all these characters that you've been building for five seasons, you realize have never met.
Yeah,
like when Tyrion and Jon were like, hey, when is the last time I saw you? I was like, oh my God, right?
Their dynamic back.
Yeah.
Because
I'm so excited for all that.
Yeah.
It's pretty, spoilers, but it's pretty wild that fucking Cersei is outwitting Tyrion.
I know. But also, he seemed to say, again, not to dive into this forever, but he was like, he sort of knew that she'd be expecting it because he was like, we'll outsmart her by going through the sewers. But just by him admitting that she was expecting it, that already it should have tipped him off. It's a bad plan. If she's
expecting
it in any way, don't do it. Yeah.
Right. She'll know. She's good.
Right.
And she's maybe a little bit better at military than he is. He's more like political intrigue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's also like, as a competitor, willing to do more than you are. Like,
right.
To give a foreshadowing of what could be a topic for later in the episode today. When I was at Harvard, there was like this kind of rivalry between the Harvard Lampoon, which is this satire magazine, and then the Harvard Crimson, which was the newspaper, and all the like journalists all the good boys and girls who want to be journalists were in the Crimson, and then the Lampoon was all the fuck ups.
Stoned, brilliant, dead, or whatever.
And in this like ongoing prank war, my roommate was in the Crimson, like the good boys, and he was like, we're never going to win because they are willing to do so much more than we are. Like, they would break the law, they would get kicked out in order to win this prank war. What are we even, like, he didn't understand why they even pretended to keep doing it. And Cersei's like that. She'll
some people just want to watch the world burn.
Right.
That was a terrible Michael Caine impression.
I knew who it was. So Michael Caine's in the podcast room with us now.
Is Michael Caine is here? It's a bit nasal. Now we're just doing the trip. Great fucking movie. All right, hold on. Let's read one more. This one's long, so I don't know what it says. It's from Webmanic, like I just can't even. I was in a coma back in January after a car accident. Pussy. The doctors thought I was done for, so they had my family and friends come and say their final goodbyes. My friend had this podcast on when all of a sudden my finger twitches. The doctors were amazed. They thought I went full Shivo, but not the moment the movement of my finger caused them to step back and wonder. Then my whole arm reached up. A miracle indeed. I reached up and slapped my friend's iPhone to the ground, shattering it. Once the audio garbage crackled and fizzed out due to the broken phone, my eyes opened. Your disgusting expired Axe body spray fuckboy voice mixed with the ramblings about the garbage East Coast saved me from my coma. I would have rather died.
That was a good one.
That was strong. Thank you very much, Webmanic.
Nice pros. Did any of those give you a funny name that was slightly off of John Gabrus? I feel like that's a usual trope.
Yeah,
I don't think we had any of those today.
No, none today.
Your John Gabrus.
Yeah, here you go. Kick the Jams, just awful. John Garbus is a Long Island back alley dumpster fire of a person mumbling over comedians and listening only to turn their stories into punchlines of fart jokes. He looks like, and then it just ends. Wow. This guy, as he was writing the review, was like, and he looks like, he's like, what am I doing with my time?
Yeah,
opens his drawer, takes a gun out, just blows his hand off. Suicide's no joke.
Yeah, suicide's no joke.
To make the joke, and then the second your guest starts laughing, to go, hey.
No, hey, come on, buddy.
Come on, dude.
Be respectful. It's the second time it's come up.
The second time I've thought about killing myself since this podcast started. And countless other times today, I just never brought it up.
Yeah, sure, but it's no joke.
Yeah, it's not a joke. Let's not fuck around. Nate, We were discussing, we just worked together on a little something, which the listeners will, the shitheads will find eventually. Yeah, right? It'll go out. Right?
Yeah.
I'm like, all of a sudden, I'm like, wait a minute.
Well, you never know.
Yeah, that's true. Hopefully the hard drive got deleted.
Could crash, yeah.
And we were talking about you coming on, and one of the things we thought about, since the title of your forthcoming book, or what, maybe it's out already? When
August 8th.
August 8th, which I think is this day. No. Yeah, it'll have come out 2 days ago. So it's out now.
As you're listening to this, it is out.
Have you ever heard a podcaster have more trouble with learning when they're... I could have looked that up a second ago, and I'm like, it's either coming out or out now. It's
one
already
or the other.
Called Not Quite a Genius, and something that came to mind when I just read the title, luckily enough, I was able to get a copy of the book, and I was able to get through the title and then really hash out the title. I looked at the back cover for a minute. It's really funny when you get a book from your friend and you like just read the jacket, and you're like, wait, I know that about
Yeah.
Or, oh, interesting.
Or like, yeah, that's not how I'd put it. That's a stretch.
But Not Quite a Genius made me think of like not quite getting there. And when I talked to you about that, you were like, no, I completely can wrap my head around that. So I thought wasted potential or whatever we're calling this.
I like that wasted potential. Yeah.
And what made you say like, yeah, wasted potential works for me? Because you did go to Harvard. Right.
Yeah.
You did almost win Beauty and the Geek. I've
had a few almost. Yeah. Yeah, that's the big one.
Those are the two things I had. those are in my wedding vows in the New York Times when your wedding announcement, the two big things. Harvard class of whatever and Beauty and the Geek contestant.
Runner up. First runner up. I think, well, so the title comes from an essay. The book's a collection of essays and humor pieces, and it's like some are fictional and some aren't. And that one's from a real story about how I worked at the Apple store when I first was in, when I was living in New York City. And I would work at the, I worked at the Genius Bar, but my title was not Genius. So they have like different designations, and like I hadn't gone through the
was
training.
Was that orange shirt or like, yeah?
I had just started where they had just shifted to full cobalt blue. So everyone
wore blue.
Yeah, yeah.
But it used to be like geniuses wore one color.
They had,
and then,
geniuses had, I think, black, and then like the concierges had green, yeah. And then like, so the floor staff had something else. So I was a family room specialist was my funny title. And that meant that I was allowed to fix like small devices like iPods and iPads, but the geniuses could fix computers as well as iPhones. So if people had an iPhone problem and they were stuck with me, and once they learned I wasn't a genius, they'd be so disappointed. And I worked there for like 9 months, and basically it was just people being disappointed that I couldn't fix their, you know, broken screen or tell them that that the wine damage to their iPhone counted as water damage, and so it was not under warranty.
It's really funny. It's like one of those things where you're like, yeah, okay, I'm going to take this job at the Apple store. Hey, great, great gig, but I went to a top tier college. I'm really in New York City. I'm going to try to make it. But hey, I'll take this job. I mean, I'm above it. It's just a temporary job. And then you get there and you're like, so yeah, I'd like to be a genius. They're like, no, bro.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's like me. I did construction for one summer in New York, and I was like, I just need money. I'll come. And then onto the site, I was like, a problem. Like, yeah. I was just not good at all. And I was like, oh my God, right. I'm like, yeah, this bullshit. I guess I'll do it. And I'm like, oh, I'm not even good at that.
Yeah.
I'm not even good at things that I don't care about. You know what I mean? It's like, I suck at this.
My senior year of college, I had like one of many freak out moments when I was kind of sensing that all my Harvard peers were going to go on and do more impressive, better things than me.
And they did.
And they all did, like pretty much to the T. Yeah. Pretty much everyone I can think of. Like, I'm trying to think of just one person right now that's not true for, and I can't.
Yeah, I don't know how many Harvard kids go back and work at their parents' deli and get stuck there.
So my roommate Joe, who also the same guy who worked for the Crimson, he's like a great guy, really smart. He was going to go work for this consulting firm. And like, I think he told me how much he was going to get paid or something. And I was like, oh my God, what am I doing? Maybe I should apply for that. Like, oh yeah, I'll sell out for a couple years. Like, and I got into my head like, okay, I can sell out. And so I like submitted and I got in the interview. And then it was an interview where they'd give you these like similar to like an LSAT test where they give you a problem and they just want to see how you think.
Yeah.
So the problem they gave me was like, so a person asks me, how many energy bars like power bars, like for athletes, do you think are sold in the United States every year? And so they want you to start with like, well, there's this many people and probably this many are athletic, just to hear your process. Yeah. And you're allowed to have scratch paper. So I'm like going through it all. And
this
I'm
is like the Men in Black interview. Yeah, you know, it's like, it's mostly a psychoanalysis.
Right,
of like
just to see how you do under pressure.
Yeah, there's like 12 people watching through a window.
Yeah, yeah. I think it was recorded. And so I think I'm fully confident that I'm doing well. I'm like, yeah, I'm killing this. Like, I eat energy bars. I eat Clif bars and stuff. I'm going to be great at this. And I think I'm being funny. I think the interviewer was also from Colorado where I was. So I'm like, oh, yeah, this is going great. And then I get to the end and I like punch it in on the calculator. And I'm like, so I think that it's a 100 trillion energy bars every year. And I kind of look up at her like, oh, that seems a little high, right? And she's like, yeah, I think that's a little high.
Okay, yeah, there's 25 billion. People, they have four energy bars a day each.
Yeah, you know, just something like that. And then she didn't even pretend to like keep doing the interview to humor me. It was just like, you did so badly at that. There's no way that we would hire you.
Like, so even cool. And then you got to walk out going, I didn't really want to do
that. Yeah, exactly. But even when I thought like, yeah, I'll sell out, I'll do this thing.
You couldn't
like,
even get
No. No, you got to go work at the Apple Store.
Yeah, worst comes to worst, I'll just do this job. No, you are not qualified.
Right, exactly.
Oh, all right. Well, see you later, assholes.
Yeah.
What a bummer. Yeah, the reason I may have mentioned this anecdote on the podcast before, but I was like super smart. Like I was considered like my parents, like I knew how to read when I arrived at kindergarten.
Mm-hmm.
Like in kindergarten I could read and I was super smart. And then like it turns out retroactively, and my parents the whole time were like, I'm so proud of my son, he's gonna do this. Harvard was a big joke in my house because my parents were like, in like first grade I got glasses and they're like, he's a little Harvard boy. Yeah. And my dad didn't even graduate high school, so they were just like, if you can get into college, you could probably get into Harvard.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Don't even know.
Right.
And I'm like, oh yeah, I'm gonna go to Harvard. And then that was like when I was like 10, I was like able to do so, read so fast, contain so much information, and then I just fucking plateaued.
You just
and
stayed
it turns
at that
out
level?
I'm still that smart, which is not bad for an adult, but for a 10-year-old is like I looked like
a prodigy.
Yeah, I was like, my parents were like, holy shit, this kid. And then it just every year I got closer and closer to average.
Everyone else caught up. Yeah.
Everyone else is like, I'm learning that too. Hey, yeah. Oh, hey guys, come on over. Yeah, if I get this. And then by the time I was in like advanced classes with gifted teachers all the way until like junior year, I had to step down from the advanced classes, but I had already taken classes because I was in advanced. So I was in classes with kids a whole year younger than me, or like a year older than me, who are, I'm just like in a class with 12th graders and I'm just a random 11th grader. It's not an advanced class. I am now an idiot amongst
just
other idiots.
Yeah.
I'm like, fuck! I trickled into college and made it through college, but I was like, fuck, dude. And then in hindsight, I was like, oh, wow, that I needed to harness that. I needed to do something about it.
And was there ever a moment where your family like acknowledged that? Was it just such a slippery slope of the like from one year to the next?
It was like no one really acknowledged it. But then like when I started getting in like trouble in high school, because I think I also just like reprioritized everything. Like once I got to be like 13, once like 14, 15, whenever like boobs were around, I was like, okay, girls give me attention when I am funny.
Yeah.
And that's all I needed were those two pieces of information.
Right.
And that kind of just threw me through to like 26.
Yeah.
Like to date, I still like fundamentally have a better show if the crowd is female heavy.
Really?
Yeah. Or at least I bring more energy
harder. You try harder. I want to do better.
Yeah.
That's funny.
I know. It's so weird. It's like, and I'm like a gross misogynistic style comedian. It's like, I'm still just so excited. Women,
I'm bringing it
chicks
tonight.
Are in the crowd, bro.
That's really funny.
Yeah. So I feel like I've wasted. And also I just know that I've wasted time fundamentally, which I had imagined. Free time is nothing but potential, because who knows what you could do in it. And I've just fucking burned it all away.
So that potential, like, does it feel like you want to be doing something else? Or is it the feeling of wasted potential? Is it more just like an abstract, like intellectually that, or is it like an emotional, does it bother you?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure. I don't think so, because I think like I'm pretty good at what I want to do.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I think is like enough for me to feel okay in this world.
Yeah.
But something I was just thinking about is like, think about your friends who, like most comedy people, most are slightly above average intelligence, mm-hmm. or slightly more skilled or preternaturally good at certain things, and or very charismatic, something about them. But then if you make it in comedy, that's a good job. That's right. A good life. That's right. Like undeniably a good life. But if you don't and you quit when you're like in your mid 30s,
right,
or whatever, and you're like, all right, I guess I'll be a lawyer now. And it's like, you just blew 15 years keeping your weapons sharp.
And that's what it seems like, yeah.
Yeah.
And it feels like different than another field. This is also just my ignorance of other fields, but I feel like my brother-in-law is a lawyer, and like, you know, he's trying to be a lawyer, and he like, the equivalent of him getting like a staff writing job on a TV show would be like him getting a law job at the top law firm or whatever, right, in like corporate law or whatever he wants to do. Whereas like the equivalent of being a teacher at an improv theater is he's just a lawyer at a less prestigious law firm. So he's still a lawyer, you know?
Right, right, right.
Whereas like the fall off, if you're trying to do comedy, is like almost a different
thing. Like if you're trying to be a lawyer, you're not like 3 days a week meeting with other people who are looking for lawyers.
Right.
And they're just looking at you going, yeah, no, we have enough lawyers. We need a couple of diverse lawyers. Sorry, get
just,
lost.
Yeah, just saying no to you again and again and again.
And then you're like, well, I call myself a lawyer. They're like, yeah, great. That's awesome. So do you do law anywhere? You're like, well, I'm trying to. It's like, we're really looking for lawyers with law experience.
I'm an aspiring lawyer.
Yeah. In the meantime, I'm a bartender.
Yeah.
That's such an interesting thing, because it's like, no one, I guess you would just take a shittier, like, it's not like you can't, oh, I can't write on Broad City, so I'll write on this show that I consider like, okay, no, I can't write on that. So I'll keep dropping, like, my standards are dropped. I'm
right,
like,
I've dropped them.
Young Sheldon, okay, we got to get me in the room.
Oh, baby, yeah.
Boy, genius. if you listen to my most recent episode of my podcast.
I actually talk about
it. And I'm like, this show sounds insane. God, please give me a call and invite me to do one thing on it.
Yeah.
It's an insane world to be in.
Yeah.
But I don't have that. My peers in college, as I got older, pre-comedy, were all like business-minded, like tri-state area dudes who were just like, bro, you got to move to Jersey, get a house, dude. You get a fucking job at Pfizer, and then you're fucking loaded. No big deal. You know? It's like, that's what all of them did. So I never had, I couldn't imagine being around truly aspirational people. Was that like, in college at Harvard, was that like a vibe that was there? Because like everyone is striving.
Yeah.
Does it like make you want to try harder?
It made me want to. It almost wasn't even like, and this is like the real dangerous thing about, or dangerous, like the thing about privilege is that it wasn't even like a striving so much. It was more of an assumption. Like, I will be doing this. Like, I will be a senator in 20 years, or like, I will be working, you know, at
whatever,
like,
their thing was.
Whatever their thing was. Yeah.
Just believe that it was going to happen for them.
And probably a lot of it was because, and I think this is like a cliche, is that it's a lot of kids who have never failed before.
Right.
Like, it's all the kids from like all the high schools who only knew success.
Well, because you had to get there.
Yeah. And some of it is that, it's like high achieving people. And then some of it is because they're coming from places of privilege. So it was more like, it was aspirational. That was part of it. But then it was just an assumption of like, you will be doing something important. And it was, there wasn't everybody. Like, there were some like artist types who kind of were like anti wanting to achieve in a traditional way, but even
that's like an insane, weird, spitting privileges face to be at Harvard and being like, I don't even know what this bullshit is.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, then go to Amherst.
And
go,
even they, like, those people still wanted to, like, they were going to be the leader of the Occupy Wall Street movement and write a book about it, which I'm thinking of a real person who did that. So even when they do, even when they choose the non-traditional path, it's still in like a very impressive way.
I'm going to be in charge.
Right. Exactly.
I'm from Harvard.
Exactly.
I'm in charge of a coalition of street grifters, but it's me and I'm in charge.
When I was really young, I didn't think of myself as a smart kid. I remember like, up until second grade, at least, I thought school was like kind of hard, and I like didn't like doing poorly on tests. And I remember specifically in second grade, like, Chris Schreck was a smart kid, and like the teacher, he would get like perfect grades and all the teachers liked him, and I was really jealous of him. And then in third grade, we took a test called the Iowa Test of Basic Skills. Did you have to take that? It might have been like a on the West Coast or regional thing. And that was the first year that they had like the gifted and talented track. And I tested in like the 97th percentile or 99th percentile or whatever. And then so me and like six other kids in my grade were had to like leave class to go to GT, including Chris Shrek. And so for the first time, it was like, wait, I'm one of the smart kids?
Oh,
like,
hell yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Try this bad boy on for a little bit.
Yeah, and so that was the first time when I started to have my parents, or especially my mom, like, well, Nate's a little genius, you know? Yeah. Like, and then so you start to, I did start to think of myself that way, like, oh, maybe I am one of the smart kids.
The more I talk about it, the more maybe I was just around dumber people too, you know what I mean? Like, my family is not that smart. My dad was like kind of, like, was a smart guy, but wasn't educated. So I'm wondering if at the same time I was like, being like, I'm fucking genius. Look, I'm smarter than adults. But it's maybe it's like they're very dumb adults. Like, I'm sure there's some fucking 10-year-old kid who could like fucking outsmart me. Or I'm sure there's a number of 10-year-olds working together. A group of 10-year-olds. I heard them talking on the fucking playground. They're coming for me. Like, stepbrothers, eat the white dog shit. I don't want to eat, lick it.
That made me think of... in psychology, there's like an idea of like the optimal zone of challenge, which is like if something is too challenging, you'll just quit because you're too frustrated. And if something's too easy, you won't apply yourself because it's boring.
All right.
So I think I like lucked out that I went to a school that was like a middle sized school in like a not that competitive state where I could feel like school challenged me. And so I really applied myself. But meeting our friends who went to like tough, like boarding schools in New York City or something, I feel like if I would have gone to a school like that, I would have been like, oh man, everyone else is so much smarter than me. Fuck it. I'm not smart. I'm not even going
to
try.
I think part of the reason why I continued to want to learn was because I was considered smart.
Right.
I think a part of, I mean, and again, it could be just like self-fulfilling prophecy or
I think that's part of
act the way you want for the job, that expression. No, dress for the job you want, but this would be like act like you've been there, it is. I'm like wondering if maybe the reason I was into learning and wanted to read more and is because I was being told I was smart.
I think definitely.
So weird that falls off really hard.
Right. I feel like thinking about education, I feel like the ideal way, I don't know how we would actually do this, but would be to structure schools in such a way that we could like find that thing for each child of like, that makes them feel smart, like so they want to keep doing it.
Yeah, like the person, like the that like personalization. Like a high level personal trainer will always say some people like to get screamed at like it's CrossFit, like some people like that throwback high school.
Right.
Some people just want to be left alone. Some people want like a little whisper, like come on, mm-hmm. let's get finishes up. Like and you have to learn that about your clients and before you alienate them if you do it a certain way. It's like what if someone like now that we know about like dyslexia and like all the shit, like kids who like didn't have good glasses and couldn't read what was on the board were just like, ah, fuck it, I'll just like lose this.
Totally, you know,
like the shit that would happen in school, you'd be like, oh man, what if we like just paid attention to how kids learn?
Yeah,
like,
exactly. Individually,
I'm sure there is plenty of schools in the nicer neighborhoods in Brooklyn and Santa Monica that do that, but I don't, obviously that's not nationwide.
Right. Yeah. But to have that tracking that you either get on that right track where you're like, yeah, I'm smart, or you don't.
Or at least you know, like, all right, well, Nate needs a lot of visuals.
Right.
Like, it seems like no matter what I say in front of the whole class, John doesn't get it. But if I tell him one-on-one, he totally can wrap his head around it, you know? Because that would be like, I would be like a genius because I would have no one to try to impress in school. So I would have paid attention to the teacher if it was just us.
Right.
Because I wouldn't have been trying to wise off and be considered cool.
It'd be funny for all the girls.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Hey, I see you over there, sweetheart. I notice you like a lot when I'm particularly weird. I got that.
Hey, okay. I'll do that again. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was doing the personal trainer thing, but for women's senses of humor. Or like, to be fair, I would say also like alpha, like bully types.
I would
be like, how do I get Donna Frio to fucking be cool around?
You want to like impress him?
Yeah. Cool. I want the pass. I want the safety of like, Leave Gabriel Stallone. He's cool.
Don't make fun of him. He's funny.
He's funny. He's in my class. He's funny. I know he wears Hawaiian shirts and he's 17.
Did you?
Yep. I thought they were like the most fun thing. No, I was like, this is just the coolest thing you can have. Because I was into like that surfing style somehow. Like I was wearing like Quicksilver, Rusty, and Billabong like from when it was kind of cool in my town, like 92. But then I kept it on through like the mid-2000s. And through college.
Yeah.
I mean, I still have like, now I shop at Tommy Bahama.
Oh man, Tommy Bahama is so comfortable. I love Tommy Bahama.
I love it. If you're talking about dressing for the job you want, I think I need to be a retired on a boat.
Yeah, it's if like, you're wearing Tommy Bahama, that's what that is.
That's like my fashion style is I am a retired fat man. And the other thing about Tommy Bahama is they make size 42 waist
and
pants.
It's also loose. It's like loose and flowing. Yeah. So it kind of hides whatever your figure is.
Yeah, but it's like
drapes off of you.
This is perfect for drinking 12 Bud Light limes on your dad's fishing boat or whatever.
Yeah, it's like it's clothing that if you pass out in the sun from drinking too much, you'll be relatively protected. It's like anticipating that happening.
Yeah, and like I've seen some of the most I go to the Tommy Bahama every time I go through the Grove, and I go there often to see movies. And
I've
I'll
been
be
to
like,
that one. I've tried on some hats there.
Oh yeah, I've
didn't
got
buy
a
any, but
closet full of Tommy.
Oh, I see him. Oh baby, yeah, I like that green one.
Here we go.
Oh
yeah, here's this is this is Ralph Lauren, but it's satin.
That's nice. It's satin
or silk and satin.
Silk.
It is. I have a
silk Hawaiian shirt.
This is a silk Hawaiian shirt.
Oh my gosh! Listeners, I'm verifying. This is a silk Hawaiian shirt. That's incredible.
I wore this with shorts to a wedding in Cabo, and everyone was like, okay, that's a weird outfit for it. And then I wore it to a wedding on the Chelsea Piers when I was home for like Del Close Marathon.
Because you've done it for a wedding once, so you're like, yeah, it's okay.
Yeah, I'm like, it passed for a wedding. It was really hot that day. I'm like, oh, and it was like a rugby buddy who was getting married, and he's like, I'm not going to invite you if you can't make it. I'm like, I'm actually in town for the Del Close Marathon, and I'd love to come over after a show. And I fucking showed up there in a Hawaiian shirt, and I've been doing DCM all weekend, so it's like, oh, it's all loosey-goosey, and he and it's a rugby buddy, so I'm thinking people are going to be dressed crazy. And then I get there, and it's black tie.
Oh, no.
And
I'm in
white buttoned, white shorts, docksiders, no socks, and a fucking...
Did you go
loudest,
in?
Yeah, I went in, hung out the whole time.
That's great.
As a matter of fact, I think one of the buttons is ripped on that from...
From that part? Yeah, or from that wedding?
Scuffle, yeah. A fun scuffle.
Oh, okay. Yeah. A rugby scuffle.
A classic, like, hey, it's now midnight, time to start yanking on each other's collars and shit like that.
Well, I think the personal trainer comparison, I think, is a good one, actually, because I think like with athletics, it's true, too, where I did cross country and track in high school. And it was a similar thing where it was like just the right amount of challenge where I could like in the races against the other schools in my county, I would get like first or second or third. And it was just challenging enough that I like did pretty well. I got recruited and I was on the team in college. And then my first race was just I was like. Like 500th place out of, you know, 1,000 runners, and was like, oh, this is the same amount of pain as running in high school, but with no reward of winning the race or almost winning. So I'm going to stop doing this.
Yeah. Or when you see how much harder you would have to try to get to where you'd want to be, you're like, if I'm comfortable doing X amount more percent hard work in this training for the cross country, but I only get from 500th place to 310th place, I'm like, that's not worth it.
Exactly.
If you're telling me you could be top 10, but you have to put in 250 times the effort, I'd be like, all right. Looks like I'm either going to fucking play your coach or. Yeah.
Right.
So did you quit?
I like limped along like literally and figuratively because I like tore my quad muscle. So I like kind of stayed on the team. But then basically I like started to think of myself more as a comedian over the course of college. And then was like, maybe I'm not going to. So I didn't do it my senior year, but I was on the team the first 3 years.
When you went to school, did you think you were going to do something like did you not? Because I didn't really know about comedy when I went away to school. I thought I was going to be I thought I was going to be an FBI agent. Like, did you think you were going to be something?
I thought lawyer, then politician.
Wow.
And that's what, so the other thing about like my mom telling me you're a little genius, and then like I did better and better in school, and then I became like valedictorian and straight A's and all the classes. And so in high school, like friends, and then especially like friends' parents would say like, Nate's going to be president one day. And it was also like in this little small town, so it's like, I don't know. It's like,
and that's just like the job everyone thinks.
Exactly. Yeah.
No longer an esteemed career option.
Right. But even like.
Yeah. Look at this trash monster. Right. Yeah. He could be president someday. this person's a scumbag and is
could be president.
Well, perfect. Yeah. Anyone can be president.
The bar has been lowered. Yeah. But yeah, even up until maybe when I was like 25 or 26, when I would go home, like friends, parents, or just like teachers around town would be like, so Nate, you still going to be president one day? Or like, I'm looking forward to voting for you, which like slowly shifted from being like a nice vote of confidence to like feeling like, oh, I'm such
like,
a failure.
At this point, I've been in 12 improv shows that would bar me from ever working in government.
Exactly. Yeah. Like I have, there's a video of me on YouTube right now that, exactly.
Like you could search my name and the three of the top 10 things would disqualify me from most jobs.
Right. Yeah.
Like I couldn't even imagine trying to go into politics now. It's like, hey, we went through 100 episodes of your podcast.
Yeah.
And you said the following statements. Right. And I'm like, oh, I don't even want to know.
I know.
Even when people quote back to me funny things I said, I'm like, I said that?
Ooh,
Jesus Christ. Yeah. I'm like, ooh.
Just out of context. It's anything. And sometimes in context.
Oh, the context actually made him more offensive.
Yeah. Oh, that's what he was referring to?
What's the context of this quote? He was saying it to a handicapped child. It's like, oh, yeah, that's problematic.
Yeah. And we have the recording. Oh, he wasn't just saying it. He was yelling it. Yeah.
And the handicapped child was just minding their own business, rolling by. Stop.
It's not
fun. Hey, it's no joke.
It's no joke.
We
don't joke about that.
Do you feel like you've wasted? Like, I'm like.
Yeah, I think I'm doing better now. I'm like 32. Actually, this is gonna sound cheesy, but so I'm married. I just got married and very happy. And in a way, I sort of feel like all the mistakes I made are okay because they led me to marrying Miranda. And
right.
Like, had I gotten more successful earlier on, I might have like moved somewhere else. And so just the fact that I'm now married to Miranda does like retroactively kind of make all my 20s like it was okay. I had to fuck up all those things and like
to be in that certain spot to be. Well, that's like, I joke about like how I didn't go to like the good school that I wanted to go to and all that stuff, but I met my wife in college. So it's like that was the right move to do that. And I met her because I dressed like an asshole and was the funniest kid in our communications class.
Yeah.
So the thing that I actually was doing that was maybe wasting potential
some
in the classic
thing.
Sense was actually creating, laying the groundwork for what would be eventually the thing that makes me happiest.
Right.
In life,
exactly.
Which is such an interesting.
Yeah.
Also, not to get, I don't even want anyone to hear this, but like if you went on to become like a like you would eventually find someone that like, you know what I mean?
That's,
hope so.
No, that's true too. Yeah.
And quite possibly still Miranda.
Right. Yeah.
But like that, yeah, it's not a, like, don't choose to fail to hopefully meet the right girl.
Yeah, that's not the lesson.
Got it. Blow it off because chicks like losers. You know, like,
but it does feel like a good, like, reset isn't the right word, but it is like I'm happy with my life right now, and so therefore that's okay, and now I can just like do my best going forward.
Right.
But there's a while
you realize
there.
Like, oh fuck, potential. This is the greatest thing I could have done is married or become in a partnership with this person. Yeah.
Well, it is like a good reminder of like because being so. Wasted potential is inherently like a framework of looking at the world that really focuses on achievement or whatever else. And like, cause the point is you didn't achieve something that you could have.
Right. You didn't get to the point that you didn't, all this space, this wasted potential space is like self-inflicted in a way too. Cause you're just only cause you're picturing a certain goal.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And like, that's really funny when you like, you could really retroactively make your life look like you've been on the exact correct track the entire
time.
You could literally, you could straight up just be like, I'm going like, oh yeah, no, I needed to spend a decade playing StarCraft and drinking at Under St. Mark's and screaming, fucking disgusting phrases in front of strangers for free. I needed to do that for a decade to be where I am right now.
And it's the only way I could have done it.
Right. Yeah. There's no other way I could have been hosting my own middling success podcast. There's no other way to get there with the exception of spending a decade tucking your dick between your legs for a fucking late night gag.
On stage.
On stage in front of strangers. Yeah. Waiting 45 minutes with your dick tucked in between your legs and like sunglasses on backstage so that you can come out and sort of get rushed through a bit that you've worked on for fucking 8 days. And you're like, in hindsight, you're like, what? You want? Yeah, talk about wasted potential. You could just talk about writing packets, like submission packets.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, I just like randomly looked through my folder that was entitled writing. And I have like this show. And I'm like, oh, my God, I've written so much stuff for specific jobs that I didn't get.
Right.
And it's like, what the fuck? That is just a ton of material. I did not. Yeah.
Yeah. And some of it is like, not to get too nitty gritty, but for some shows, maybe it's like an idea or a sketch that you could maybe repurpose or use some other. But some
often
of
it's so
specific.
Yeah, it's like 10 jokes in Trevor Noah's voice. Right. You know, you're like, okay. I'm like, how could I? As a South African man.
Yeah, 10 jokes the week, like 10 jokes in Trevor Noah's voice the week of May 15th, 2015.
Right.
Yeah, not going to use those again.
Huh? Yeah. How about this Dark Knight? Huh? Right. This Heath Ledger thing is sad. I have no idea when any movie came out.
Yeah, that could be right.
Could be right. I mean, it's still sad.
Yeah.
To be fair,
don't joke, and we don't joke about it.
Yeah. No joke. Suicide's not a joke. Drug addiction is not a joke.
I lived in England for a year. I think maybe when I was living in England is when Heath Ledger passed away, and I was like, that was a place where I felt very not as smart as my peers. I was in a program at Cambridge, and I remember this, like, I feel like GQ or Vanity Fair wrote this article that was like imagining what Heath Ledger's last night might have been like, and it was from his point of view, and I was really sad about him dying, and I thought it was cool, and I like sent this email to a couple of the other people in my program because we had been talking about Heath Ledger, and none of them wrote back. And then I like followed up in person, like, oh, do you guys read that thing? And they kind of like looked at each other and they exchanged a look where I could tell they had talked about the thing I had sent them. And they're like, oh, yeah, we thought it was a little like pedestrian and cliche. And I was like, oh, God, this thing I was sad about that I sent you.
Wow, what a great place to leave Harvard to find a place where you feel even shittier. What program were you studying?
It was called Screen Media and Culture, and it was for a 1-year degree called an MPhil, and I got a fellowship to go there for a year. So I did that right after college.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's when I still felt like maybe I was on track.
Right.
But
it was because you weren't then studying media, at least.
Yeah.
You were like, oh, what were you? What was the intention at that point? What was the?
Still like wanted to do. Oh, by that point, I'd already. So I started college thinking like politics or lawyer than politics. And then by the end of college, I was like, wait, doing improv comedy is my favorite thing to do. Like writing comedy. I love. I want to do that. So went there thinking like maybe something with TV writing. And I ended up studying TV. Like everyone else was writing about film. And I was like specifically wrote about TV. Went to New York to do Teach for America, and I was thinking like that would be my day job while I tried to do comedy.
And then
I did a bad job at Teach for America. I failed at that. I quit before the end of the 2 years that you're supposed to do.
No.
And that's when I started working at the Apple Store. So that was my like low point of thinking I was like, yeah, I'm a Harvard grad. I'm going to go write for TV.
I'll go from Harvard to Cambridge to teaching in New York City.
Yeah,
and
I think I also probably thought like, one, I did believe in the program, but then two, I think I thought it would be like an interesting backstory for my like future, obviously successful comedian self.
Yeah, I did 2 years of Teach for America. Of course I did. It's like the intellectuals' armed services.
Right. And exactly.
Yeah. It's like, I did 2 years in the system, brother.
Right. Especially, I don't know if it still is, but at that time it was like, yeah, that was like the most prestigious of the like AmeriCorps like type, Peace Corps type things
you could do.
Or it felt like it.
Yeah.
And I think I maybe even thought that I'll be in New York, like, yeah, you know, Lorne Michaels will see, you know, he'll walk into my classroom and see what a funny math teacher I am. And he'll ask
okay, Mr. Dern, yeah. Come with me.
Stop what you're doing. Come this way.
Class, I'm sorry. I'm just eating popcorn in the back of your class.
So that was when, like, that was a low point of, like, had failed at teaching and then was, like, working at the Genius Bar. Like, oh man, maybe comedy's not going to happen for me. Maybe I like made some wrong choices. And then that was like 8 years or something. It was like all the 20s.
Didn't quit.
Yeah. Didn't quit. And then started working at UCB. I was like, oh, maybe I'm going to be okay. And then got a job at Funny or Die 3 years ago. And, you know, I still, now I'm like, okay with it, but I still wonder sometimes, like, had I made other choices?
Right. Did you use your momentum that you got?
Yeah. Did I use the momentum? Because it felt like I had a lot of it for a while.
Then. Right. You're like, fuck, coming out of Harvard, going to Cambridge, coming into New York City. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, like something that, when I was on an early improv team, good friend and future guest of the podcast, Matt Moses, I was on an improv team with him, and he left
law firm or a
different? Yeah, no, before law firm, Mailer Demon, he left to go to Yale to get his MFA in playwriting, which is like the Eugene O'Neill scholarship. It's three kids a year, three students a year, and it's all paid for, and you get a stipend over the summer to write. Yeah. It's like an insane job, insane thing, and he gets it.
Wow.
And he leaves and goes to fucking gets his MFA. And in 3 years, he comes back and he joins the law firm. And we're back doing
just
improv.
Back where he was. Yeah.
And I was like, dude, look at me, man. You went to fucking Yale and got an MFA. And I'm still doing the same bullshit we were doing when you left. And he goes, I am now too.
Right.
And I was like, I was looking at it like, oh man, but hey, you have an MFA. But he was like, no, I have an MFA and I'm on your Harold team again.
Right, yeah. Right,
and
I'm
like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh fuck. Yeah. There is a negative there.
Yeah. That's really interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And shows how you can, like, the same event, you can interpret those two different ways.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, we're peers, we're colleagues in a way.
Yeah.
We're on this, and like, we both came from exactly different places. But then at some point in our development, we landed on the same track. And we're like, okay,
here we are. This is what we're doing. Now.
That's sort of what there is still a bit of a meritocracy to comedy, a little bit. Where
I think,
like,
so, and that's encouraging. Yeah.
Like, yeah, good people will always, like, people who are good at it or people who are funny will always often break through.
Yeah.
Of course, people who are shitheads but have some skill or know how to network or have uncles that are rich or all the time in the world because they don't have to have they don't have to work at the Apple store for money.
Yeah.
Of course, those people will have advantages and do well. But if you're fucking funny, like, you can, people know that.
Yeah.
Like, it's like I think that person is funny is like, I just said I think, and then I was going to call that objective.
Yeah,
no, that's considered subjective. But yeah, it's like one of those things where it's like, if a bunch of people think you're funny, you can be a comedian.
Right. Yeah. And that's encouraging, I think, ultimately.
Right. And then it's like, good. No matter where you come from like fucking high school dropout, come from Cambridge, you come from fucking construction, you come from this job, you come there and you're like, oh, well, he's funny. Yeah, he's just as funny. Yeah, these two guys are both funny.
Right.
And it's like, your backstory does not come into play at all.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, I'm not wasted potential. I'm right where I need to be in this moment.
Yeah. I think when they were casting Seth Meyers, like, one of the people they hired was just this like dad from Ohio that was really funny on Twitter. Did you hear about this?
Yeah, the Nardvark.
So I love that. Yeah, if you're just like funny, your product can like rise above all the noise and
and
people agree it's funny.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, every once in a while, like, some shit breaks through, some indie kind of comedy vibe or like guys like the Workaholics who are like met at a community college and start making videos together.
Yeah.
Or, and oh, you know, do you know this guy Durs? Oh, well. And then all of a sudden they're fucking 8 seasons of a TV show. Now they're all movie stars.
Right,
it's like,
right.
Good for those fucking
loot.
And it's just like, at some point it just, you land where you need to land.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's all just self-projected. I'm just, and then now we want to get into wasting time.
Like,
if I look back on my life and about the amount of time I wasted, it's insane, but it does not change me going forward. I do not use my time better.
Right. Oh, knowing that.
Even though I'm like, fuck, dude, I can't believe how much time I blew just fucking around. Now it's like.
Yeah. I think on both sides of it, it is like how you were talking about with Moses, just like the different perspective. Like, so earlier you said the guy who like tries to do comedy for 15 years and then he goes and becomes a lawyer. It can feel like, well, that was a wasted 15 years. Or it's like, yeah, you had a good time trying to do comedy for 15 years and now you get to try this new thing.
And now you're 30 and now you're a 40-year-old lawyer and you're working next to 40-year-old lawyers. Sure, they've been there for 10, 15 more years than you, but you're a lawyer.
Yeah,
you
got it. Yeah.
And it's like, and they're like, oh, cool. What'd you do in your 20s? You're like, smoked weed with strangers.
Right. Had some pretty good 20s. And I think the same thing too with, with feeling like you're wasting time, like, not to get like hippy dippy about the creative process, but like, I think Hemingway said something like, whatever you do, it's exactly what you're cut out to do, or we all do exactly what we're cut out to do, or something like that. And I think, like, we kind of, we settle into whatever our process needs to be. So like if your process is playing a video game for an hour and then writing for half an hour, like
right.
that's okay. And like,
you, as long as you get that half hour.
Yeah. Yeah, or even yeah. like I have a friend who works for like a network sitcom. And she said in the writer's room, it's like maybe the whole, if they can get like 2 hours of real work in, that's good. And right. then it's like 6 hours of shooting the shit or 8 hours. Of
yeah.
Like
of like trying to land riffing. On something. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's like that, you know, ratio is okay. It's not a problem or it's not like a bug in the system. It's
right.
The
right. It's
of
a
the
part
system.
Of it.
Like
yeah.
you need to kind of like relax and feel good. And then like, there's the moments of that.
Right. Right. You need to get yourself into whatever the groove yeah. is or yeah.
But then there is truly just wasting time when it's like, I've been telling myself I'm going to write a new original like pilot writing sample for a year, and I still have that one I wrote 4 years ago. That
right,
I, like,
and it's like
keep meaning to update.
But. Yeah, exactly. I'm in the exact same boat, and it's like I need to get a fire on me, and then like something randomly comes up, and I'm yeah. like, oh, like the Action Boys spinoff. Yeah. I'm like, this is what all my mind is going to, and it's like these other things that I know I need to be done. I'm like, but I'm having fun doing this, and it's like I'm just like a fucking id beast, just like this is what's interesting right now. It's like no time to lay down the ground, but it's also you get casually rewarded for that behavior. So because then it's like one of those things where it's like we talk about with the cross country, it's like if I try 10% harder but only move to here, what's
right.
the point?
Right.
If I can keep not trying, and this is a good whole overall like a new thesis talking about like wasted potential. There's also an element to if you're preternaturally good, like if you start off good in perpetuity, fuck you. I'm just saying. I just gave my blank computer screen the middle finger. I'm not positive how the internet works. I did recently put a post-it note over my camera.
We
though.
Should all do that.
Yeah,
man.
I got a little scared. Yeah. But the post-it note on the inside is a drawing of me nude, so it's really
like an extremely accurate life. Like
yeah, biological. Yeah. Going back to the waste of potential, it's like one of the things you learn, because I was always very good at tests, very good at quizzes, knew the answers to questions, but would fail if it required homework or whatever. Okay. So I got by on that. I learned that, and then in like high school, you know, your final counts as like a fifth quarter. It's like you get one, at least in my school, it was you get your four quarter grades, and then the final is 20% as well. Like, and I would get 95 and above on all my finals. So I always knew that I could
count on that.
I can count on that. So I could blow it for like, I can just cruise at like 70 to 80 all year long and know that if I got like a 95, I could just like overall get an 80 something. My mom would be happy. And I was like, holy shit. And I think I learned the opposite lesson.
That
I
you're supposed to from that.
Right. Yeah. I think like from that, I was like, oh, I can cruise. I can cruise and get middling success.
Yeah.
And then maybe the only thing that's stopping me from being very successful is hard work, but also maybe it's not bad to not work super hard and be where you are. But anytime I say like this theory to someone, someone's like, you just don't know you're working hard.
That's probably true. Yeah.
Yeah. You're like, oh no, I just do 15 different podcasts a week with strangers, right, drive over all around LA trying to make something happen. It's like, no, that's hard
that
work.
Is hard work. Yeah.
You're like, oh, right. I don't.
Yeah, yeah.
You could also always, now I'm just like screaming, but you can always just feel like there's always, you could always say, I could do more.
Yeah, and I'll always feel like that, and I always do.
Yeah.
Is there anyone that doesn't? Is there anyone? I remember in college kids who like bragged about how much homework they were doing, or they would brag about like how many overnighters they'd done that month to study, or like, so some people, I can think of some people back then who bragged about how much they were working, even where... Yeah, I feel like some people, but all my friends, I think, are more on the side of like, I should be doing more. Yeah. But then they all do a lot.
Right. And I think that's just a part of the business is that like you can't do everything. Like, you know, if you're jamming out whatever your main focus is, but then like a friend of yours is like doing this cool thing and you're like, fuck, I should be working. I should be doing stand up too. Yeah. Or like, oh, fuck, I should be writing.
Well, it's like it's confusing because one friend has a great podcast. Actually, like even doing this podcast today, like in preparing for it, I start to think like maybe I should be doing a podcast.
Right.
Like, I listen listen to this. I think it's great. Maybe I could do something like, or, and then another friend gets a stand up special. And even though I haven't done stand up in 4 years, I'm like, maybe I should get back into that.
Yeah. Like, but oh, cool. Cause that looks fun. Like
different friends, you know, working on these things.
Right.
Really,
and you just
hard.
Look at it as like, my peers all do these things. It's like everyone does something different. Yeah.
To be a successful comedian, you need a podcast and a stand up special. And right, this, right.
And I'm like, it's just not going to happen. Wait, what were we just saying? Right? Did I step on something? That sounds about right for High and Mighty to not know exactly what we were talking about. But yeah, you feel like you could always... Oh, you were saying, are there anyone... I think now there are well-adjusted people, friends of mine, who would go like, I got 4 hours of writing in or 2 hours of writing. I knew it wasn't coming after that. And I went, got lunch, did the gym, met a friend, whatever, you know, do I just knew... And then... I'm okay with that.
Yeah, that's true.
I think that's like...
They're like regimented. They're like, they know if I do 4 hours, I feel good. Right. I don't need to do more than that and I won't do less than that.
Right, exactly. Like, and there are some people who are like, if I get 3 pages a day done, I don't give a fuck how hard it comes or how easy it comes. And I'm like, oh, that's such interesting.
But they have to get 3 pages.
Right, they have to get 3 pages. Sometimes it comes in like 1 hour and sometimes it's a 7 hour grind and you're just writing filler to get the third page.
I think in On Writing, Stephen King, which we were talking about his book, I think he does the time thing. Like no matter what, he's going to be in front of his computer or his typewriter or whatever, like for 4 hours.
That's the right move. I wish I could like... I dream of someday being a morning person so that my life is like, I get to the gym, I work out, I'm back home at 8 and then I sit at my computer from like 8 to noon and just write and then I go about my whatever I need to do.
Me too. I dream of that too.
It's the thing we're dreaming about is not...
It's so achievable.
Like anyone listening to this who has like a job as like a nurse or like a grip or...
That's pretty good news, yeah.
That happens frequently in the... People often hit that...
It's a compliment to you because I what just happened, listeners, is I threw my head back in laughter so hard that I hit the wall behind me.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. I got stressed for a split second. Your eyes rolled in your head. You spoke German for 1 minute.
Yeah, that part I don't remember, but it's all on tape, so... You heard it.
You heard it here, folks.
I didn't break this.
No, that's fine. Everyone hits their head on that because it sticks out like a touch. If you just... You can't really lean back on that couch without throw pillows because it's a Victorian fainting couch, as I learned. Cool, right?
Very cool.
It's one of those things where, like, the shit we're talking about, like, if only I... It really just means going to bed earlier and waking up early.
Yeah.
It's really doable, which is the scary part. I've convinced myself I can't wake up in the morning. I do hate it. I do too.
Yeah. I've also... Maybe I'm like another part of all this and like is how good I am at rationalizing things. And I've rationalized like, well, sleep's so important. Everyone says that.
Oh my God.
And so every day.
Preaching to the choir. It's like, exercise is important. Should I wake up an hour early and go exercise? It's like, yeah, sleep is pretty important too.
Sleep's important too.
And way easier.
And sleep, right. They're both important. Sleep wins.
Sleep and exercise, equally important. All right, I'm going to get 14 hours of sleep a night.
Yeah, and have 4 beers to help me sleep more.
Yeah, sleeping is good. It's an indica. It'll knock you right out. It's perfect. Oh, yeah, I'm the king of rationalizing. Yeah. I'm the king of just being like, you know, and a lot of it is kind like comes from a kernel of truth that I then extrapolate out to like, oh, it's good to get stoned and like not worry about things every once in a while and just like, you know, dream and daydream and fuck around on the internet or like watch some weird movie. That's good for your mind. It's good for your body. And then it's like, it can't be good to do it every single day.
Yeah. And so it's tough. Yeah. Cause it's absolutely true that is good. Yeah. Right, but
but you know, you got to do other stuff. And it's like, then when you do like the other things, you're like, oh, I went for a run today and I do feel better as a person. You're like, fuck, I did not want to know. I was rationalizing that. It's like, you know, I need to work. So I don't have time to exercise. And then I'm not filling the time I don't exercise with important shit.
Right.
That's the funniest thing. Not funniest, but that's the thing about all this is that it's like, I want to be doing this. I want to be doing that. And it's all I can be.
Right.
I don't even have a kid or anything like that. Oh, like, gosh. It's like all that shit that is like a classic time suck. I don't even have a day job that I hate. You know what I mean? Like,
and still,
and still I don't do what I could be doing, things that I keep saying I want to be doing. And I don't know what that is. I get in my own way, like creatively and stuff, where it's like, I shouldn't do this non-work thing because I need to be working.
Yeah.
And so I'll sit at home and not work over. And just this last summer, maybe the summer before, I got into like, I wouldn't go. I didn't go to the beach like the first two summers I was here. I was like, I'm off all day today, but I really should be just like.
Yeah, that's what I've been saying on the weekends. Yeah.
Right. And I'm like, I should just be getting some work done and stuff. And then all of a sudden you're like, no, fuck it. Go to the beach. Or the day you don't go to the beach to work, you're at home and you 4 hours of it are watching Glow. And you're like, what the fuck did I just do?
Yeah.
Great show. Glow's lovely great. Show. Yeah. Glow's is great. Awesome. Yeah.
Check out Glow if you haven't seen it. Yeah. I'm serious. Yeah. It's not, I don't joke about that.
Don't joke about Glow. Check it out. It's great. It's really funny.
Sunita's awesome. Yeah.
Everyone's great on it.
Yeah. They really are. Actually. Yeah. Mark Maron. I think it's my favorite. I've seen Mark Maron. Yeah.
I know. I hate to take a show that's like all about female empowerment and stars. Eight females and go, but Mark Maron is doing something special. He really is. He's doing like the best I've ever seen him.
Yeah, but
and it's right in his wheelhouse.
Alison Brie, is that her?
Alison Brie,
she's great in it. Yeah.
She's so awesome. My co-star from the film The Little Hours. Get to see her boobs in it if that's a thing that matters to you. Yeah,
yeah, and that's true.
Yeah.
Wait, you're in The Little Hours?
Yeah,
that's cool. I didn't know that. When's that come out?
It's out. It came out a couple weeks ago. Yeah, I have like a small part in it.
That's really cool.
I play Nick Offerman.
It looks really funny. I'll go check it out.
It was. We just saw it in the theaters, me and Tiff, and it came out pretty. I mean, I saw it at Sundance. wasted potential. My ass. I'm at the number one film festival as a number 15 on the call sheet.
Yeah.
Don't know what's going on around.
Were you invited to Sundance or did you have to pay your own way?
I was invited to Sundance because the director of The Little Hours is a buddy.
Oh, nice, nice, nice.
First of all, that's how I was on set. That's how it works, baby. Yeah.
I have a few years ago, I was in a Paolo Sorrentino film called Youth, and I have like five lines in it. I'm in like five scenes. And so it's the biggest acting thing I've done. But then it premiered at Cannes, and then there's no like US premiere. And so I just paid for a ticket to go see it at the Angelica because it was only playing in like two theaters in New York. And then as I walked out, I was like really hoping someone
would be like, aren't you the guy?
Yeah.
You're kind of like hanging out by like, start doing kind of the same movements your character did.
Yeah.
You have like the outfit on.
Right.
I'm standing in like chain mail with a spear outside, like, get your autographs here. I got invited to Sundance along because he was like, look, we can't pay for the guy who has two scenes in the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's like, I want everyone there.
Yeah.
And then Adam Pally, good friend and also co-star in the movie, was like, I'm getting the house. Because he was in two movies at Sundance.
Yeah.
And he's like, they're paying for me to have a house.
That's awesome.
Do you want to come?
I was like,
And then they got the production to split the cost of the flight with me. So I went to Sundance and like.
It's funny. Yeah, stuff like that. I had like. Naively years ago just had no idea how it worked, and I think I like even before this film I was like, oh, it's premiering at Cannes, like, so are they gonna fly us out to Italy? And they're like, no, we're not you. Oh wait, is Cannes in France? I think it is France.
They're gonna fly just you to Italy.
We're flying you to Italy, Nate. You stay away.
You're a patsy in a weird insurance scam. So just deliver this envelope to whatever.
Yeah. Or like this, I have a book coming out and like I'm doing a book tour. I'm doing air quotes when I say that because I'm just like, I was like, I'll do as many book events as you want. Like, I'm ready to work hard. I'll like go wherever. And they're like, great. There's $0 for your marketing budget. So anywhere you will be, like, we'll give you, you know, we'll like arrange with the bookstore there. So basically,
you like looked at your own schedule.
Exactly.
And you're like, oh, I'm going on vacation with my wife to
That's
this
exactly
place.
Yeah. It. It's like, well, we had tickets to a concert in Missoula this weekend. So I'm doing an event in Missoula. And my cousin's getting married in Minneapolis. So I'm going, we're doing one in Minneapolis.
I thought your tour list was pretty interesting because it's like places that are there. It goes like LA, then like Missoula, then like New York, then LA again, and then like Portland, and it's like it's
just where I'm gonna be. I'm going to the Pacific Northwest for work, so I'm like tacking one on there for Funny or Die. I'm up there, so it's all just
that's really fun. Oh god, the fucking glamorous life of like a writer. So I'm going to visit my mom. My aunt's in the hospital, so I'm gonna do a couple of book signings down at the hospice.
Yeah. if at least 10 people show up, they'll pay for my cab fare. So,
The one fun thing about going to Sundance, I mean, a ton of fun things. It's cool to be there. It's inspirational. Yeah. It's cool to see other movies and random movie stars in winter jackets.
Yeah, yeah.
But the coolest thing for me was I do very well in live off-the-cuff performances. That's like pretty much what my entire training's been. Fuck, I'm not a good actor. I'm not like a studious writer, but riffing randomly to a crowd of strangers is like my specialty. So that's all Q&A's are.
Right.
And I'm like shining in these moments. And it's like the crowd, I'm standing next to like Nick Offerman and Molly Shannon and John C. Reilly. And I'm like, here's the thing, you know, you're drinking all this red wine and fucking Tuscany. And everyone's like, oh my God. And I'm like, I'm getting laughs, but I'm like, I'm ruining the Q&A. To the point where one of the bits became when we were getting interviewed by Variety magazine, one of the bits was the director, anytime the question was so obviously like for a director or for the lead, he'd go, well, maybe Gabriel should answer this. And I would have like an insane answer. Like I just was like, why am I here with all the talent of the movie?
That's awesome. That's really funny.
Well, Nate, we have dinners to attend. We're just reaching the end here. And as usual, we always end high and mighty on me talking about myself for 11 unbroken minutes.
Perfect.
But let's talk about you for a minute. So your book's out now in bookstores.
Out now.
Amazon, all that jazz.
At Amazon, at your local bookseller. We got an audiobook version. We got hardcover ebook. I read the audiobook.
Oh, that's awesome. So if you like Dern's voice on this podcast.
If my voice was not off-putting to you for the last hour, you're still here, and you could imagine listening to this voice for 18 more hours, go buy the audiobook.
Yeah, how long is the audiobook?
I actually don't know. It took 18 hours to record, so less than that. But a thing I learned about audiobooks is it's pretty much just one take.
Yeah, you
if you flub a word, you do it again, but otherwise there was no direction of like, hey, maybe a little. It was just
like, let's take it again, but like pop your peas less or whatever.
Because I think the audio engineer was great and he was really helpful, but it's basically like he assumes that I
have done this
before. Or like that I know what's funny about the piece, so he's not gonna like give me notes on how to say it.
Oh, that's really funny. It's called Not Quite a Genius. So I would recommend, if you like Nate's voice, get the audiobook.
Thank
you. If you want the actual book, go to a bookstore and get it, and not just because that helps Nate in any financial way, but because it's awesome to still go to bookstores.
I think so too.
Get to the you're doing Powell's too, right?
Doing Powell's. That'll be cool.
That's fucking cool as hell. We went to Portland for my birthday one year, and I was like, here are the things I want to do. I want to buy weed because it's recreational there. I want to eat at these three restaurants. I want to drink from Deschutes Brewery. And I want to go to Powell's.
Me too. That's like my top thing there. Yeah.
It was a fucking great experience.
It's cool.
Like,
it's really cool. Yeah.
And I didn't even have a book I wanted to buy, and I bought like five.
Yeah, it's
the best.
It's like Strand or like a place you can just walk around.
Yeah, you
can
just,
and love
it's like,
books.
Oh, there's a, I didn't even go to this floor yet. You're like, find a random flight of stairs. It's like fucking Hogwarts. It's like,
yeah, it's awesome. It's magical.
Let's end on Game of Thrones. It was like the Citadel.
Ah.
Yes, Maester.
Nice book ending of the show.
Book ending of storybook ending of a memoir / fictional essay book story. Wrap it up, Gabris. And what are you on Twitter, Nate, if people want to tweet at us their wasted potential stories?
At Nate Dern.
NateDern. As always, I'm at John Gabris, no H in either. Check out the little hours in the theaters. Buy a shirt at Gabris.com/shirts. Subscribe to the Action Boys Patreon if you're missing all the action movies talk. We're doing it week after week. It's only $5 a month. And buy yourself Not Quite a Genius. Buy a friend of yours that it thinks they're smart, Not Quite a Genius. Yeah. And with Amazon, I know we're talking about going to bookstores, but with Amazon, you can skip that having to pick something up and deliver it. You could just order shit to people's houses.
You can send it right to them.
Yeah, send it right to them. Send an unmarked box from Amazon to a stranger.
Just type in a random address.
What? Imagine we got like a loyal group of people to do,
That'd be an amazing campaign.
Right? I have a book for free. I should buy one to support you, I should just send it to a random smattering of addresses.
If like the next internet rickrolling could be that you send, instead of sending someone a video, like the YouTube video of the Rickroll song, if you sent someone a physical book that said Not Quite a Genius, like that was a weird dig to do. Oh, baby, that helped me out.
Wouldn't that be huge? Like, and like you're just known as the guy who's like, this book sold through the roof. No one read it.
Yeah, no one read it. It's not good.
Yeah, actually one guy did and he hated it.
It's got a 1-star review, but it sold a million copies.
Thank God I became a meme prank in real life. All right. Well, thanks, Nate. This was a pleasure.
Thanks, Gabriel.
Bye, shitheads.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.